And thanks for joining us this evening for Between the Notes, right here on 88.5 KRFY Panhandle Community Radio. I'm your host, Susie Prez. Sit back, relax, and be inspired as you listen to this live in-studio interview and original music from singer-songwriter, local gal, Holly McGarry, who will share songwriting ideas, insights, and a window into her musical journey. Holly also has brought her bandmates, Ben Burns and Chris Bonaraz.
Bonaraz,
okay. So welcome Chris, Ben, and Holly. It's really nice to have you here. Say hi.
Hi.
Hello. Hey, guys.
We're here, and I'm really excited. You know, Holly, it's, what was it, 2010, I first interviewed you, and
yeah,
that was
ago.
Recorded in your living room, and I remember that day. Someone was mowing the lawn back and forth, and so the whole interview has this lawnmower going back and forth. But nonetheless, we got through that.
Ambiance.
And a little bit of ambiance. Well, I call them the living room tapes. So
nice.
And so you're a local songwriter. So many of us know you. I have friends right now listening all over the country, just so
aww,
you know. You can stream us on the web. And musician, singer. You started playing at a very young age, and I know that Doug Bond played a big part of that.
Oh, I love Doug. If he's listening, I love you, Doug.
Yep, you did it, Doug. And you've wowed us all. I remember the first time I heard you. Remember that little coffee house that Doug and Kim had?
Oh, Perky Mama's.
Perky Mama's. I couldn't
Perky Mama and Vinny's. I'll never forget.
Nice.
And since then, you've gone the distance. You went, you left home.
Mm-hmm.
You grew up, you left home, and you're just graduated from the Berklee School of Music in Boston.
Yeah. Feels
and,
crazy.
We're very happy to have you back. You just played a great concert at Live at the Office Office of the Reader. I think you wowed everybody there too.
Oh, thank
in
you
fact,
so much.
My one of my bandmates was there and she said, "I'm never playing again."
No,
keep playing.
Anyways, we're really here to talk about songwriting, but we're really in luck because we're going to hear some live music, too. It's kind of a little jam here in the studios of KRFY. So we could just start a little bit of background.
Sure.
As I said, I interviewed you over 3 years ago, and much has changed.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I don't even know where to start with that. I guess, you know, finishing high school, was good friends with the Shooks. And they took, actually, fresh out of high school, they took me on my first tour, the Shook Twins and John Craigie. And that really opened a lot of doors and opened my eyes. I got back and my friend said, you know, "I've never seen you happier." And I knew that, too. I knew that I, you know, that was kind of like the trial run, I guess. Could I do this? And, you know, I only loved it more after going out on the road. So, yeah, after that, booked a couple tours with Cedar and Boyer and Josh Headland, who are, you know, bands and artists that I admire tremendously to this day. And, yeah, and after that, went on to school, had mixed feelings about that. You know, it's hard being away from home and everything that I knew, but, you know, everyone here is so supportive, and I met some really great people there, you know, my bandmates that are here with me today, you know. Really fortunate to have met them. That's one of the most important things I think I got from going so far away.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
So songwriting, it still plays a very important part of your life. It's what drives you forward.
Oh, definitely.
And music in general.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just one of those things when you haven't written a song in a while, you don't feel quite right. But, that's the other good thing about, you know, meeting new people is new influences, new chord progressions, or, you know, different kind of things like that, or, you know, even different things lyrically through life experience and stuff like that, or, you know, Ben, who's in the studio with us, you know, we collaborated on some songs, and that's really helpful. You know, if I'm stuck and he has some sort of musical thing, you know, then, you know, I toss it back to him and kind of a back and forth thing, and he may change around chords or words, or I might do the same to his kind of stuff, but it's really nice and really healthy. And then Chris, who's also here, you know, he and Ben have changed existing songs. The arrangements have changed so much too in that time. So
So I remember when we talked before, when you were younger, you really started with the thought of writing poetry. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you mentioned. And then Doug came along and put a guitar in your hand. And then he said, let's hear you sing. I remember you doing that song by the Beatles, Blackbird, was it?
Oh, yeah.
And that was like, all you had to do was hear your voice, and you did so well. And aww. But now you're saying your world has opened up.
Oh, I definitely think so. You know, it's one of those, I think it's always good to get out. I mean, Sandpoint, I'm so fortunate to have grown up here, you know, me and my peers. But, you know, equally valuable and important to get out, even if it just makes you realize what you had back home. But, no, it's good. It took me a while to realize that, you know, the same arms would be open when I came back, and that, you know, they were happy that I was moving on and doing other things. But, yeah, very valuable.
When you went to school, was it to, I don't know that much about the Berklee School of Music, mm-hmm. except it's one of the best in the country. Was it to hone your songwriting skills, or was it overall to develop yourself as a working musician?
Well, I think most people go with the idea of, you know, developing what they're doing, kind of their focus. And then you go and you meet people and you meet professors and take classes. And, you know, I didn't end up in the major that I thought, and I didn't end up, you know, I had no idea what was going to happen. And I'm kind of glad, you know, so it was more of a whole life development than, you know, just songwriting or anything like that. But it definitely, one feeds the other always. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I think that's the whole goal of college. It's not necessarily, at least in the beginning, to mm-hmm. kind of go down one stream. Some people know that, but mm-hmm. And music was your major stream, mm-hmm. and then it opened up. I know that occasionally I would follow you on, would it be YouTube or something, you're playing in New York City or Brooklyn or mm-hmm. something. How fun is that?
Oh, yeah, it was great. I mean, you know, one funny thing, I thought going to Boston, you know, that was a big town, but New York City, that's crazy. But I'm glad I've gotten to experience it a bit.
I just wonder sometimes with 8 million people just in Brooklyn alone, if you're just absorbing creativity by the gallons or something, and you can't yeah. help it.
I mean, it's an energy like no place that I've ever been. I mean, I hear that from a lot of people. It's, you know, it's buzzing.
Yeah. And Chris, you grew up in Long Island?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so as a child, you probably went into the city occasionally.
Yeah, I went when there were shows I wanted to go check out and stuff like that. Uh-huh. And yeah, I just absorb a lot every time I'm there. There's just so much going on, you know.
Mm-hmm. The creative hub. What about you, Ben? Where did you grow up?
I grew up on the south coast of Massachusetts.
Okay.
A little town called Mattapoisett, about an hour south of Boston.
And I should just say right now, both Holly and Chris, you just graduated from the Boston School or Berklee School of Music in Boston.
We made it.
Is it considered a four-year bachelor's degree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Bachelor's in Arts. So,
are you still in school, Ben?
I am. I sort of lollygagged a bit, but I'm getting there.
Playing too much music.
Something like that.
In the clubs in Brooklyn. So, Holly, let's just get to a little bit of the, you've mentioned how your songwriting process has opened up. It's no longer the girl at home mm-hmm. in high school, which was the last time we talked, writing poetry about what was happening. And you have songs, you're writing new songs. Mm-hmm. This band is Honeysuckle. And as you said, you're collaborating more on the full picture of the song. But if you, what is the kernel of the song, if you bring it, how did it start?
How did it start? Well, I guess it kind of depends. I mean, the newest song that I have written is called Canary, and I mean, it comes from lots of different places. I love Bob Dylan's song North Country Blues. I think that's a great story about, it's a great story about an iron ore town in Minnesota. And but also I was on the internet and I stumbled upon a really beautiful picture of a miner holding a canary in his hands, you know, like really rough, you know, beaten hands in this beautiful little bird. And I don't know, it's just like an interesting connection that like such a little thing had to that industry. And I don't know why I ended up writing a song about it exactly, but I guess something small or large kind of speaks to you, and sometimes you don't know the whole significance of it at first, and then afterwards you kind of see where more of the meaning comes from. But yeah, I guess that was that last song where it came from. But, you know, also still major life events will spur something. Not usually when I'm in the middle of them, but once I've had a lot of time to reflect, it'll turn into something.
I've often heard that most 98% of songs are about love and romance, but this little one about the canary or canary, it has a whole different inspiration behind it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say in hindsight, I look, you know, it's like a hopeful thing or like a lifeline kind of thing. I don't know, coming to an end of school or you know other, you know, life events that maybe happen this year. You want that lifeline. You want that little bit of hope. You want that reliance on something, maybe. And I guess if I was going to try to find a deeper meaning in it, maybe that's what it would be.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's a song you could play for us right here in the studio live now?
We could do that, yeah.
Is that one you had kind of picked up?
Sure, yeah. We just got to trade. We got to trade with Ben.
Okay. Go over to the banjo. We have a banjo here, a mandolin, and it's a lore mandolin.
That's right.
Chris is playing, and Holly's old Takamine guitar, and
had that for a long time.
A banjo. So what we're going to do is hear this song, Canary, written by Holly McGarry.
Yeah, and it does have a line from Ben in it. Ben writes a lot of poetry, and I snagged one of his lines.
That's always great, those great little lines. Mm-hmm. And a collaborative work by Honeysuckle here live in the studios of KRFY on Between the Notes.
Okay.
All right.
This is Canary.
Ready, gang?
Yep.
All right. One, two.
Leaves grow through the
That was stunning, absolutely stunning, standing here in the studio.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. I just heard it over at the office, but standing here, it's really, thank you so much. That's Canary, written by Holly McGarry and crew, Chris and Ben. I had all these questions, and I think you've already answered some of them, but what I'm really thinking about is you went away to school. Mm-hmm. You already had written a whole slew of songs. You were inspired. You were encouraged. You were kind of gained a lot of confidence going on tour with John Craigie and Cedar and Boyer and the Shook Twins. And you have this wonderful musical family just supporting you all over the place.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So what did you find at school that, I mean, you were away from all that, and what are some of the, I guess, treasures that you brought away besides these guys?
It was definitely very tough at first, you know, coming from a very, very tight-knit, I mean, town, and as you said, musical community. A little bit more self-reliance, I think, was one thing. I guess just knowing you can do something is really valuable in a lot of ways. I definitely complained a lot at times, so I can't lie. But through it, I think I learned a lot about myself, certainly. And I think being away from things and people who know you the way that you are allows you to change in the way that you maybe want to and develop in the way that you want to. And I think one thing I was fortunate in is that, you know, not only these guys, but, you know, a lot of people that I met and saw and was inspired by in Boston, you know, it kind of allowed me to continue on that path of who I wanted to become. I met a lot of people who, not only people that I played music with, but we're just excelling in a lot of different areas, maybe not even music that I thought that I liked, but it gave me something else to pull from. I mean, we have a roommate who plays metal bass, you know, but he's the sweetest guy in the world, and it's really inspiring to see what he does and what he does with his band and the relationships he has and, you know, relationships with faculty and things like that as well. You learn a lot. Some things... that are a bit of a shock sometimes, I guess, as to what, you know, I didn't really know what the music industry meant and that kind of things, who functioned in it and all of that. So it was really, I think it was important to learn about different people's roles and just how big of a network it is. And, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, that kind of thing. I mean, it takes a whole global community to, you know, make a musician, I guess.
Absolutely. What were some of the reactions of your teachers? You know, you went in and you had your freshman year of college, happened to be focused on music. And what did your teachers think when they first heard you? Did you have to audition to get in?
You had to audition to get into school, which is kind of neat, you know, because you know that everyone there plays something or sings something. Then we had ensemble classes, which are kind of like, they're like bands, but, you know, of like different students, you get kind of like shuffled around and put into bands. And, that was interesting. I guess one great thing that Berklee did the first week, they had a bunch of open mics, and that was a good way to meet people, because that's how you find out, you know. You could kind of find the folkies because they wore flannel, but if they didn't wear flannel, you'd hear them at the open mic and you'd be like, all right, we need to be friends. Well, Chris and Ben are wearing flannels right now. That's how I identified them. But no, that was great. And then also, faculty, I don't think heard me for a long time. But students, you know, I learned a lot from other students. Ben was actually in my orientation peer group, completely invaluable. I mean, that's crazy that happened. I mean, I don't know. Just like little twists of fate were pretty important. I don't know what faculty's reaction was, but I guess I caught the attention of some of the right students, which was fortunate.
Was really moved you forward. Were the classes geared towards songwriting or all aspects of the music picture, putting together you know, the classic thought of lyrics and then the classic thought of the melody and bass lines, rhythm, mm-hmm. all those kind of things?
Well, I guess it kind of depended on where you ended up major-wise. I actually ended up as a music business major. so we didn't talk about, I mean, we did talk about, you know, like the structure of a song is really important, I guess, in attracting people, you know. I mean, I don't mean to make it like a formula because, you know, there's a lot of variation in songwriting and genres and things like that. But, you know, the importance of like a hook or things like mm-hmm. that, you know. And I don't mean to make it sound, you know, soulless at all because mm-hmm. it's hard to teach something without making it a formula. But I think the important thing is to remember, you know, even if you are taught a formula, to always make variations on it. I think that's what makes it special.
So some of that stuff made sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was lucky that I had a little bit of experience. I had a roommate who was a songwriting major, but she hadn't really written songs before. So it was helpful to her to have the major structured in that way. And then, you know, she wrote, you know, songs based on the formula, and then she kind of went on from there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those songs you first write in a songwriting class probably aren't going to be the ones you put on a record, but everybody needs to start with something.
It's more probably like exercise.
No, yeah, which I think the more you do it, the easier things come out. You know, I don't write very many songs very often now, but I feel like, you know, at times, you know, I could write like 5 songs in a month, but it was just kind of like you're in the habit of it, and mm-hmm, they kind of mm-hmm. pour out.
I've had it said that some people will, just for practice, write a song a day, regardless. Mm-hmm. You may never, ever do that song again, but in some way, shape, or form, write a song a day. That's just another way to do it.
Yeah.
Rather than just try to go at one song and make it big, and just as a practice.
Yeah, definitely. And there's no rule saying that you can't, you know, later on borrow things from that song. There's definitely been times where I've taken lyrics or, you know, chords to a certain section and, you know, I've put it in something else, and it happened to work. It didn't happen to work out in the original, but worked out in something else. I think, you know, don't close the book on something. That's been a hard lesson. You know, Ben has revived songs that I've put in the trash can, and I, you know, tried to do the same for him, because it's easy to say, you know, that was no good. It's harder to see the potential in a section and keep working on it. But
did you hear the term prosody?
Prosody?
Mm-hmm.
Have you had songwriting clinics?
I went to a song school in Colorado, and Pat Patterson was there, and they had one whole class on prosody. I never quite got it, but the idea is that, like that song that you had just did, Canary, it was about a certain thing. The sound of the song, the melody, goes with the words so that it fits together. That's what I know, but I don't know. So you didn't get that from him?
I didn't take a class with him, but it does make sense. I think it's one of those things. You can either go that route, or, you know, some people kind of try to turn it on its head, and, you know, you'll hear, I guess, I mean, not all bluegrass, obviously, but bluegrass makes me think of this, you know, you've got such happy, like, rolling chords and rhythms, but you have the saddest lyrics you've ever heard, you know.
And it somehow fits.
Yeah, so, you know, you can always flip something on its head, but, yeah.
Well, I don't see you going to Nashville to the music farms and working in some little booth writing a song with 25 other people to make a hit for somebody else. Because what I heard tonight at the live at the office, this core of your song was just brought in with all this dynamics with the music with these two guys. And then let's talk about the harmonies for a minute. I mean, that just knocks everybody's socks off.
Oh, thank you.
And it's perfect. How did you find that?
I mean, really, I think it's luck. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's actually, it's sort of like a specific physical experience for me. Like when we hit a harmony together, it's something that, because of like the resonant frequencies in the air, you can feel it in your throat when you're really hitting it correctly, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think all of us are in tune with that feeling, you know? So, like, when we get there, it's like we know how to hold it there. Mm. A lot of times we don't have the benefit of getting there because we can't actually hear ourselves. But tonight was a good example of that, I think. But I think a lot of it has to do with sort of just, like, your ear, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all have pretty good ears. So, like, we just know where and what to sing, sort of.
When we're wrong. Oh, no.
We know when we're wrong. That's the best yeah. feature.
It was out of sight tonight. Aww. That's all I can say. Let's hear another song. I'm sure you have
sure,
one.
Sure.
Save Josephine for the going out song. So
okay,
yeah, and tell us how it kind of came about. A little bit of the songwriting background.
Sure. Waiting for the Sun.
Sure.
Can I do that one? Waiting for the Sun is one that Ben and I wrote together a few years ago. Ben is a good sport, and whenever I suggested a crazy idea, he generally went along with it. And so one crazy idea was to go to New York and play some gigs. I can't remember which trip exactly this was. Was it the house show one?
This was house show Rockwood, yeah.
Okay, so this is actually connects to Sandpoint. So I'm in Boston going to school, and I get a message from someone on Long Island, and he says, you know, I heard your music. If you ever come through, you know, New York, let me know, and I'd love to do a show. And I was like, well, actually, you know, we're playing in New York City. And then he explains to me how he heard my music. He had a friend who worked on an organic farm somewhere in the area who picked up my CD at a farmer's market and brought it back to him. And so he just reached out on a whim. So anyway, we go out to Long Island to play a show, and I get us lost. We've never been out to Long Island. We're carrying a banjo, two guitars, and an amplifier, and it's like summertime heat. We're sweating.
Oh, gosh.
And we walk a block, and we give ourselves like a break. And anyway, we get to this house, and, you know, it's all spray painted. It's just like a big gutted house and a bar. And all they do is like raves there, really, like techno shows. So we play the show, and everybody stumbles in thinking it's going to be techno. And then it's, you know, me and Ben with a banjo and a guitar. So anyway, you know, that was interesting. And then we go into New York City the next day, and we play a fun show, and we stay with our friend John Craigie and Lee Jones, who's also a great musician. And we leave him a note in the morning, you know, just like a thank you, a goodbye. And Ben says, well, we should alternate every word and see what, like, comes out of it, you know. So it's like, we really thank you, you know, whatever, that sort of thing. But, you know, we went to, you know, the sirens, but, you know, like, trying to trip each other up. And so anyway, I don't know what they really thought of the note. It was probably a strange note. But we, when we got back, it was, we were riding on the bus, and I got a text. Sorry, this is a long story. But I get a text from my friend Mackenzie, who went to high school here with me, but also went to school in Boston. And she said, a bomb just went off. It was the day of the Boston Marathon. And I turned the text to Ben, and I'm like, is there any way that this is like is this real, you know? And so anyway, you know, we're taking the bus into town still, and there's, you know, vehicles passing us, and we make it into the town. And anyway, we, you know, eventually we make it back to our separate housing places, and, you know, the city's on lockdown, but we kind of like pass the song back and forth. And that's kind of where it started. It started, the original lyric was, just like two blackbirds waiting for the bus, you know, waiting for the bus to take us to Boston. But, you know, Ben's the poetry master, so he spun the lyrics around a little bit more. But that's kind of the origins of it. We don't usually write in person. It's kind of, maybe we're too shy for that. Ben will send me a musical idea, and then I'll send him a version with lyrics, and then he'll revise it. And so anyway, that's where this one came from.
And the name again?
Waiting for the Sun. Better put the capo on.
Great idea. Actually, I have a slight edit to the story. It's not a destructive edit. It's an additional edit. We were waiting for the bus, and we were next to sort of this like dump / like ravine of highway, and there was these two blackbirds sitting on a tree branch while we were waiting for the bus, which we were usually late for historically.
Yeah, we were always running for the bus.
So we were sitting on our cases, and there was these two blackbirds just sort of in the middle of this like trash field or something. So then we looked at that, and then Holly like took out her notebook and started writing about it. And then when we got back to Boston, like and the whole city was on lockdown, and like the sales station was empty. We crossed the street and we were waiting for our friend to pick us up, and like sort of like, I guess this wasn't the nicest thing to do, but I was just sort of in a weird mood, and I turned to Holly and I was like, "Are you afraid to die?" And then like she looked at me, and I think she thought about it for a while, and then I think she said no or something. But like then the chorus of this song is sort of like that question, and then she answers it later on in the song. Yeah. So that's, I don't know why
it's
I asked her that.
It's a little cryptic, but yeah.
I'm sorry.
But you know, it's good to be introspective. But anyway, here it is. Formally waiting for the bus. This is just our intro, the tuning intro.
Great.
Hollow bones and emptiness with just a song inside our chest, just like two black bears, they're waiting for the sun. Just like two black bears waiting for the sun. And to think we reckoned we'd be warm in summer clothes, a wind from the highways tangled up our twisted souls. A wind from the highways tangled up our souls. Ask myself, are you afraid to
McGarry and Honeysuckle, kind of a co-written song. Mm. I was just thinking when I was listening to that, the words tell a story, but the instrumentation, I guess that's what you'd call it, the sound that you brought, when you say, are you afraid to die or something like that, and then all of a sudden the instruments get kind of all fuzzy together, and, and then the harmonies come in without words. It just really did tell a story just with the sound.
No, thank you.
So it kind of worked together really well.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That. Yeah. Well, just a few more questions. Let's see what we got here. Chris.
Yes.
So you've written a few songs, but it's not your focus so much.
I wrote a few songs with a friend of mine, James, in high school. And I don't know, I kind of just stopped starting ideas and started adding on to other people's ideas. Because I know people like Holly and Ben, and I play another band back in Boston with Ben, Gray Season. And John writes a lot of our music, and Ian, our bass player, writes a lot of music. And I don't know, I got a lot of good writers around me, and I kind of just add my influence to their work, and that's kind of what I've been doing lately.
It's very well done.
Thank you.
Just sensitive and thoughtful.
Awesome.
Yeah. So you play the mandolin. Do you play anything else?
Yeah. My first instrument and my principal instrument that I auditioned like to get into Berklee with and everything was piano. And I've been playing that the longest. I've been playing since I was 5, and then started playing the violin in elementary school, and I played it through till 12th grade. And then I picked up the guitar in middle school, and everyone was getting into rock. And then picked up drums for my high school band, my first band I was ever in. We were bad, but it was really fun.
And the vintage.
The vintage, yes. Long live the vintage. And then got into the mandolin, and then I got into the banjo, and here I am.
And here you are with that really nice. I noticed when you were at the office concert, you had a whole bunch of stuff on the floor for effect. Effect box.
That's my new thing. Effects pedals. Yeah.
It must be fun because you can do it and you seem to know how to do it quite well. Did you go to a Waldorf school?
No.
Oh, okay. Because I know they teach violin to young children at Waldorf schools.
Yeah, I went to plain old public school, and the standard was kind of low, but it was fun.
But you must have had a lot of musical influence in your home or something, because you've been playing for a long time.
Yeah, my dad was always really into music, and he played a lot of instruments in like high school band and growing up and stuff, a lot of flute and clarinet. And then I think he just noticed that I had an ear at a very young age. I had a little toy xylophone thing, and he played the Barney theme song to me, and then he gave it to me, and I played it right back to him, and he was like, whoa, I'm gonna start this kid on piano lessons. I think he had the intention to do something musical anyway, so me and my brother and my sister all took piano lessons growing up, and he was just very big on instilling an interest in music.
Well, how fortunate that Holly and you found each other, and Ben as a group, because you've got the sound. You've got the sound. And Ben, how about you? Are you going to finish college?
Ideally, I'm finishing college.
You will.
It costs money. I didn't realize that till now, so I'm racking up all these bills. I value the experience that I have had and will have at Berklee. It just gets complicated with like financially and stuff, but I mean, I'm always going to play music, so that's not a question. Me and Chris were in the music production and engineering program, so it's a lot of studio work and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Good idea.
That's sort of like, it's good to be savvy with that stuff, because then you can get your records to sound like you want them to, but then also like if you need to make some money and still be very, very close to the music, and that's also what you can do.
You could become the sound guys for Bruce Springsteen.
I would love to do that.
How about that?
That'd be fun.
That would be great.
Just go hang out in Jersey,
Actually my first choice of job.
Hope you're listening, Bruce.
Bruce, please call me.
I will personally send this out. This will be podcast on KRFY.org, so anyone can tune in and hear this really fun interview right now. I mean, later on, too. I think about your young people, I'll call you, really talented musicians. And what do you think of the music industry, and where would you like to go with your music?
I'll take this one, I guess. We are exposed to a lot of the music industry on a lot of different levels. We learn about it on the national and global scale in school, but then we also participate in it on like a local and citywide level in Boston. So it's like there definitely is like one sort of umbrella like music industry for the people who make it to that level, sort of. And I don't think that's necessarily our aim, because like the feeling that we're chasing is sort of like the feeling tonight when you're playing for a room full of people who are actually listening and like appreciating you, and you make enough money to get to the next place that you need to go, and like maybe I'll have a kid and a wife, and like if I can feed them, that would be great. If I can keep a house over, a house. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, nothing. It's like really our standards are like low enough for our like creativity to survive. Mm-hmm. It's not really about. I mean, it's easy to say that now because I'm pretty early on in my career, but I'd say that we don't really have like globalized aspirations for it. I mean, we don't want as many people as we can to hear our music, but do it yourself.
Yeah, I think the goal is to go as far as we can go without compromising our creativity and our like own personal you know, interest in the music.
Well, even with where the world is at right now, learning to live simply, live communally, I'll call it. And it's a different way. And yeah, you can still have a family and children if you want. You may have day jobs.
I'm sure of that.
and if it's in with music, how fortunate is that?
Absolutely.
And so with that in mind, what's next? Where do you see? I know you're going to be on tour with Harold's IGA coming up, and you're going to play at the Poor Authority at the end of the tour.
Yeah, the 23rd, I believe. It's their second year anniversary. If this is on in the IPA right now, I hope that's the correct date. I believe it is. Yeah, I mean, it varies a little bit for us. You know, they're in another band as well that's doing good things. But I think for all of us, you know, Berklee was partially to meet people and, you know, continuing to play music, but also kind of, as you said, you know, if we have to get a day job, hopefully it can be in that field. At least that was my, you know, certainly my aspiration. You know, I'd like to, Will Harrison said this and, I liked it. He said he wanted to do good work for good people. I'd like to do that. I guess that's the overarching thing, but you know, continuing to play, continuing to, record, you know, hopefully all of us, you know, get internships or something lined up. Yeah, I guess that's kind of the course. We're all staying in Boston for at least another year, and then we'll kind of see. Yeah, I guess it's one of those times in life where, one of those pivotal times where a change is coming, but it's a little uncertain what exactly it is. But yeah, definitely having to do with as much music as possible, and you know, if we have to work at a coffee shop for a little while too, that's no big deal.
Or a chocolate factory.
Yeah, Ben worked at a chocolate factory.
Was it called the Chocolate Factory?
No. Taza.
Taza Chocolate.
Oh, that's good chocolate.
Yeah.
That's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all.
I just think you need to just keep playing music. And house concerts are great. Getting into a festival, opening for a big band. Yep. I don't know if you start thinking about an agent or someone. There's a new kind of agents that just help you find a show to do. And then hopefully that jump starts something in the next step. Paying attention, finding that truth for you and your band and your music. Staying really true to that. Yeah. You'll go where you need to go.
Oh, thank you.
You know. So let's hear another live song.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about it. We'll chat a little bit more and then we'll say bye-bye for now, and hopefully we'll have you back in the studio when you come back through.
All right. Let the Light?
Sure.
Got it.
All right. This song is called Let the Light In, and it's an older song. I wrote this when I was in high school, but I guess it's an example of one of those songs where the arrangement changed a lot, and, you know, it was one of those songs that maybe I would have thrown away because it was older, but fortunately I had, you know, this good group of people that kept it alive and going. But, you know, people change, and there's no reason why songs can't kind of change and evolve with you. Take on different meaning or maybe just different sound and same meaning. But yeah, it's one of those where, you know, I started to fall a little bit out of interest with it, but, you know, I'm glad it's still, you know, we gave it a chance to take on new life, if I can say so. Apologize again for the acoustic instruments.
That's what you have to do. Tune them up.
We tune because we care.
Exactly. But yeah, thanks so much for having us. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. It is a pleasure. Okay.
Thank you. your door, Samantha.
Don't ever stop writing songs. Aww. A new, an old, a really good old song that's been given new life. So yay for your bandmates to bring that along for you. Want to thank you, Holly, especially, and Ben and Chris for coming in tonight and sharing a story with us about music and songwriting. And as it is a journey, Holly, it will continue because you're awesome. You're very talented. Oh. And it's so nice to have you back home right now.
Oh, thank you.
Are you coming back this summer?
Well, I don't know if I'll be back again after this little bit in May. But hopefully, we'll see. You know, it's one of those things now that I'm back. I'm like, oh, I don't want to leave.
I know. It's so beautiful here right now, too. And we love you. So, and we want to thank our listeners for listening to this evening's edition of Between the Notes. You can join us next week. My guests will be Fiddling Red and Desiree from Roughshod. And that's right here at 88.5 KRFY each Tuesday evening at 8. You can also hear this interview probably by tomorrow at noon on KRFY.org. It will be a podcast and it will be under Between the Notes. I want to also thank Dave Hussey for the Between the Notes theme song that you heard at the beginning of the show. Coming up next, we're going to go to automation of the local music show. And we just want to say we're going to go out with a song called Josephine by Holly McGeary and Honeysuckle. So just tell us briefly about this song, and we'll say good evening.
Well, I guess Josephine, I wrote it my first year in school, which was rough. You know, it's a transitional time, and I was far away from home. And at the time, as I said, I was having trouble, you know, seeing the upside. I was having trouble seeing the progress that I was making and things like that. So I guess it's somewhat of a reflective piece. And a bit of a sad piece. But fortunately, you know, the song's life would have ended pretty shortly after I wrote it. When I wrote it, I sent it to Ben immediately, and he didn't say anything back. So I was like, well, all right. enough of that.
I didn't mean it.
And I put the lyrics in a different song. But then when Ben and I went to record our first album called Feathers, he said to me, what about that one called Josephine? So I relearned it and we put it on the album, and I'm really glad that that he saved it, because it's one of those that, you know, once you bring it back into the fold, you kind of realize the meaning, and you see that people actually like it. That's always a nice mm-hmm. confidence boost. So I guess that's kind of its story.
Well, thank you. And again, thanks Holly, Ben, and Chris from Honeysuckle. It's been a real pleasure and a real treat for me to have you here and to talk with you this evening.
Oh, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, and enjoy your amazing journey. Life is just so beautiful, especially with you bringing your music in. Oh. This is Honeysuckle, and the name of the song is Josephine. We hope you enjoy your evening.
Josephine, don't you think you went too far? They mistook your innocence for charm. Now the sick moon's on the rise, I see the rising scarred in his jar. There's ghosts who live inside these walls. I wonder if you walk these halls anymore.